Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. This is Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And our topic today is compassion. I'm very glad you're joining me. This is one of my favorite topics because I think it is so powerful in our lives, the presence or absence of compassion. And we're going to talk about that today. So one of the things I've mentioned a couple of times is one of a big struggle I had in my life at a certain point was finishing my dissertation. And when I finally did, all the wonderful friends I had made in the preceding 2 years or 3 years sent me had a party for me, a big kind of blowout party. I think they were as relieved as I was that it was finally over. It was a wonderful evening, and this was in a somewhat small community, right? It was a small college in a small town, and what does that mean? It means that you get to invite all the people you want to invite, and you got to invite a couple people that maybe you skipped in another larger location, but it was a small place. So one of the people I invited that was a little bit of a challenge for me was somebody who had struggled to be maybe compassionate or maybe as supportive as I would have liked him to be, as supportive as I thought he should be to me when I was going through this dissertation process. Another person I invited was my mom. She had moved to St. Peter a couple of years after I did, and my friends loved her. My mother was a very lively, funny person, kind of a sparkling personality, even though she was actually extremely shy. And she really enjoyed social gatherings with my friends from the college because it made her feel pretty smart and alive to be around all these people that she thought of and as very well-educated and intelligent and interesting, and that they were nice to her and enjoyed talking to her meant a lot. So one of the challenges, though, is that my mother, in addition to being bright and lively and clever, was also fiercely loyal to her children, to me in particular, I would suspect. And one of the ways that she demonstrated that was if somebody was mean to me, she didn't really have much use for them. So at one point I looked across the room and I saw the person who had maybe not as been as supportive as I would have liked for him to be in my dissertation process was trying, making a valiant effort to talk to my mom. And it was going nowhere. My mother could be sparkling and witty and a effervescent personality, or she could be stone cold. And that's exactly what she was. No affect at all. Terse responses. She did not have much time for him. And he was a good sport about it. He just acted like nothing was wrong. And finally, I think, found a way to escape this very, very chilly conversation. My mother, fiercely loyal, really great at standing up for me, not always great at standing up for herself, I would argue. So the other day I thought of this because my partner came home from work and told me a story about somebody at work who had been not very nice to her. And I jumped in with both feet. She barely finished the story when I was right there, mad as all get out and clever suggestions about snarky things she might say to this person whom I have never met. I too am I'm my mother's daughter, and I'm fiercely loyal to people I love, and I'm so fiercely loyal that I'm willing to shove them out of the way of their own story to tell them what they ought to do and be super angry and cranky on their behalf. So I bring this up in the context of compassion, because compassion is an expression of love, right? And it's really hard for us sometimes to know how to express our loyalty, our concern, our deep feeling for another person, particularly a person who is suffering or struggling. There are a lot of obstacles that we put in our way, that come in our way through our repeated practices, our habits of mind. And so today we're going to talk about the challenges to compassion and the way in which a mindfulness practice can help us have a clearer path to expressing compassion for others, for the world around us, and first and foremost for ourselves. That's a tall order, and a tall order means we should be in a calm and clear state of mind. So let's breathe, shall we? Laurie Cameron's three deep breaths. We start with the inhalation where we pause at the top. We let our exhalation be longer than the inhalation. And then our first breath, we simply pay attention to our breathing, the sensation of the air entering and exiting our body. The second breath, we notice any place where we feel tension and we relax. And then the third breath, we set our intentions for this moment. What do we need right now? So please join me. Breath one, just notice your breath. Breath two, relax. And breath three, set your intention. Compassion. When I want to go back a couple of steps to a time and some ideas. I used to teach interpersonal communication. It's a class I probably taught a bazillion or maybe 30 times. And in every communication, interpersonal communication textbook, there's a place where the authors talk about sympathy and empathy. And I'm guessing that now, given the pervasiveness of conversations about mindfulness and the incredible work of people like Tara Brach or Jack Kornfield or Kristen Neff, around questions around or issues around compassion and thinking about compassion, that they're probably now talking about compassion. But I used to teach this and we would talk about sympathy and empathy. So that's what I want to talk about first is sympathy and empathy and compassion and drawing some distinctions. And of course, I could straighten my glasses and give you dictionary definitions, and I actually have one coming up later. But I think it's actually more helpful to think about those concepts as we experience them, both as we try to express them and as they are expressed towards us, to see both their strengths and their limitations. So sympathy, I can't think of the word sympathy without thinking about a death in the family, right? So we have struggle sometimes to express sympathy because we want to think about that. You know, what is the challenge? What is the barrier? It can be fear-based very much, not wanting to get too close to something like death. And we try to express it, but the challenge sometimes when we express sympathy for someone is that it can be very alienating. It can be done in a very alienating way. So in any kind of interaction with another person, there are basically three ways that we interact with them. We may interact from a position of superiority, a kind of one down towards them attitude or intonation in our voice. One across, a way of communicating that suggests we're equal, or a subservient way where we communicate from a lower position towards what we experience as their superiority towards us. And sympathy can really come across as one down, right? Poor you, glad I'm me. And that is, sympathy in itself is not a bad thing, but we know that the actual practice of it can run into some troubled waters. And we may not recognize it when we're the one expressing sympathy from a one-up position, but I'll bet you know it when you hear it towards you. So that's something to keep in mind. What does that sound like? What's that tone that I don't want to bring to sympathy? Empathy, then in a interpersonal class, we tend to sort of hold up empathy as superior to sympathy. And intended to be or thought of as a more equal expression. So I am feeling with you. And it can show affinity, it can show solidarity, it can show understanding and having listened, but empathy can shift too, can it? And we know that this happens when, and again, we might notice it when it comes towards us more than when we express it, but that empathy that says, I know exactly how you feel, right? We know that that can be alienating to another person. You're not in my body, you don't know exactly how I feel, or I've had the exact same experience, right? No, probably not. And one of the things that's at risk there, and this happens a lot in interpersonal conversations, is it's easy for a person who's maybe more comfortable with oral communication or more extroverted in their talk, so very comfortable talking to another person, to inadvertently take over the conversation. So when I start with that, I know exactly how you feel. I know exactly what you're talking about. Now I'm really at the risk of taking the conversation over, and let's talk about me, right? Let's talk about all the ways in which I am familiar with this situation and all my experiences of this situation. And suddenly we're no longer expressing either sympathy or empathy. So they're both important concepts. They're positive ways of interacting with another person, but they are also tricky because we can slip in a kind of bad habit, a mental habit that we don't love, but we have to deal with, into a place where we're really talking down to a person. So we're going to take a breakdown. When we come back, we're going to talk about how is compassion different, and especially compassion in the context of a practice of mindfulness. So I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope you'll join us after the break.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune into All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, CourageToBeSeen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And today we're talking about compassion, and particularly compassion in the context of developing a mindfulness practice. So here's the dictionary definition I mentioned that I'm just going to share with you. We've been talking about what is sympathy, what is empathy, and how might they be distinct from compassion. So the dictionary is not our friend on this, because it says compassion is sympathetic, pity, and concern for the sufferings and misfortunes of others. Yikes. Okay. That's a very uncomfortable definition to me, and especially because it includes the word pity. I mean, I can really not think of very many interpersonal interactions that are more unbalanced than one where one person feels pity for another person. If you've ever been pitied, just think about how did that feel. I don't think pity is empowering. I don't think pity is a mindful witness to my suffering. I think pity is just, I am so glad I'm not you. So we're not going to use that one. We're going to go with Tara Brach. Tara Brach has written several books, but the two that I strongly urge you to look at, the first is Radical Acceptance, and the second, more recent book is Radical Compassion. And this is how she describes radical compassion. It means including the vulnerability of this life, all life, in our heart. It means having the courage to love others, ourselves, and the world. Radical compassion is rooted in mindful, embodied presence, and it's expressed actively through caring that includes all things. So it's the courage to love ourselves, each other, and the world. It's rooted in mindful, embodied presence, and it's expressed actively through caring that includes all things. So we've been talking these last weeks about mindfulness in general. So mindfulness is bringing our awareness to the present moment without judgment. And we've been talking about becoming students of our own mind so that we know that our habits of mind, where when I'm lost in what Brock would call a trance, when I'm lost in mindfulness, where does my mind typically go? Am I reviewing the past? Am I worrying about the future? Am I making a to-do list? What is my mind doing? Where does it typically go? And I develop mindfulness practices so that I can see that, so that I can bring myself gently back to the moment when I notice my mind wandering, so that I can have a kind of journey that I understand about the places that my mind goes, so that I recognize when I'm lost, gone down a rabbit hole of the past, or I'm being carried away about fears about the future. Because we know that those two things happen often, that being carried away or by the past or future, but also other times when we just stuff those feelings down and we try to distract ourselves, that may or may not do something to take our mind and our feelings, our body, away from whatever it is that is causing us suffering. So I think that keeping that definition of mindfulness in mind and the reason that we try to become a student of our own mind in order to know where our mind goes helps us understand the obstacles that we experience when we believe ourselves to be capable of compassion and know that some things get in the way. So here are five things that I think get in the way kind of routinely. One is being overwhelmed by feelings of helplessness in the face of someone else's suffering, and also at the same time feeling required to act, right, to make things okay for the other person. So instead of having Brock describes as mindful presence towards that other person and caring for that other person, we may just go into problem-solving mode, right? Have you tried this? Lost a job, you're struggling in your relationship, you're unhappy with some other aspect of your life, and so I have 20 different things I'd like to suggest that you think about, right? Have you updated your resume? Have you gone to marriage counseling, right? Have you tried this diet, right? I just want to solve whatever problem you've brought to me. And if I look inside, I'm noticing, I think, that I'm feeling helpless and anxious in the face of your suffering. I think that what my mother and I tend to do was sort of jump on the bandwagon of your suffering, right? I'm so taken over by my feelings, my anxiety about your unhappiness, that I want to push you and your feelings out of the way. I not only want to solve it, but I'm actually going to take on all those feelings myself. But I think that's an obstacle to compassion. I think sometimes we are ourselves the cause of another person's suffering. And when that happens, I think what keeps us from feeling compassion is the need to be absolved. This is a personal story, but anyway, I do a lot of personal stories. Was in a very casual relationship with a person. That person slept with a mutual friend of ours. It was a very casual relationship. I didn't really care. But he came to me and he said, "I need to apologize." And I said, "Oh, you know, I understand this, you know, sure, of course, this was maybe a violation of something, maybe at least the friendship dynamic among the three of us, but it's really okay. I don't feel any concern about it." But he kept going on and apologizing and explaining. And finally, the light bulb went off for me. And I said, "Steve, are you looking for me to absolve you of your guilt?" And he just laughed and said, "Yes, total recognition. Yeah, that's really what I'm looking for here, is absolution." And I think he wanted to have a compassionate response towards me because he was concerned he'd hurt my feelings. But really, that wasn't enough. He really wasn't after compassion as much as he was after absolution at the end of the day. And then I think two other things that get in our way. One is we tell ourselves, and particularly when it is our own suffering and we're struggling to be compassionate towards ourselves, is that compassion is somehow letting ourselves off the hook, right? And we're especially, I think, if we're filled with guilt and self-criticism and shame, to say, I'm going to have a loving attitude towards myself, I'm going to bring caring and kindness to myself, I say, oh, I'm just letting myself off the hook. That's too easy. And then I think a fifth thing that happens, again, overwhelmed by our feelings, is we shut down. We look away. We withdraw. I can't express compassion because I can't be here with you. I can't participate in this. So radical compassion, if you think about all of those ways, all of those obstacles to compassion, a lot of them have to do with our inability, our unwillingness at times, our fear of being vulnerable, right, to this life, to all of it, right, to our heart. We lose courage as we struggle to love ourselves and others and the world. And we struggle to stay in an embodied presence because we're so overwhelmed with these negative feelings that we either shut down or we overreact in certain ways and we go beyond caring to really taking over or withdrawing completely. So I think when we think about wanting to be compassionate towards other people, we really want to think about the ways in which there are true obstacles to it. So I don't know if you've ever seen the film Ordinary People. It's one of the few films that I think is just as good as the book that it was based on. The book is by Judith Guest. And what is, I always think it's nearly a horror film, because one of the main characters is played by Mary Tyler Moore. And if you don't know who she is, you should Google her and you'll see bright, perky, spunky Mary Tyler Moore. She was in most of the roles that she played on television and the Dick Van Dyke Show and in her own The Mary Tyler Moore Show, the soul of compassion in lots of ways. She was a person who got along with all of the difficult people in her world, who was very understanding and kind. And she's kind of the opposite in Ordinary People. And it's a film about a family, the Jarrett family. They have two teenage sons, and the boys are out in a boat, and there's a bad weather and an accident, and the older son dies in the boating accident. The younger son survives. And he's pretty racked with guilt and fear and horrifying dreams, that recurring dreams. You know, he's very stuck in that place from this trauma. He tries to kill himself. And when we meet them all, this is after the son who has attempted suicide has come home, and he's trying to get back into high school and find himself again. His father, played by Donald Sutherland, at his most affable and kind and warm, trying to help. But the tension with his mother is just absolutely palpable. And late in the film, as the son finally discovers that he is angry at himself for surviving, right? He's guilt-ridden by the fact that he survived. He's angry at his brother for dying, for letting go of his hand as the storm raged around them. And that he is struggling to accept his mother for exactly who she is, right? He's gone to see this great psychiatrist played by Judd Hirsch, who tries to help him see and notice what is really getting in the way of his life. And one of the things is this acceptance of his mother, that she can't be effusive in the way that he thinks he needs from her. So can he instead be accepting towards her? But the mother really struggles with even talking about any of this. She has a limiting belief about how her life should be, and it's kind of perfect. It's seamless. This is a very affluent family with a perfect house and perfect relationships and perfect everything. And that's where she feels safe, is in that perfection. So that to acknowledge any of her feelings is just too threatening, and she can't do it. And that's a great example of somebody not being able to show compassion for themselves, which is getting in the way then of her ability to show compassion for her child. And so a couple of things I want to mention about this. One is, and late in the movie, she and the husband, the father, have a confrontation, and he says to her, "Can't you see anything except in terms of how it affects you?" And she says, "No, I can't. And neither can you, and neither can anybody else." And that scene has always really stayed with me, because I think about what it would be like to be so lonely in the world that you believe that you can't see the world from anyone else's perspective but your own. But more than that, no one, that you believe there's absolutely no one who sees the world as you see it, who understands where you're coming from, how you're making sense of things, how you're feeling. What incredible depth of isolation she must be feeling in that moment when she says that. So I think that she struggles then towards the end of the film when the son really does kind of break through and he finds his own compassion for himself, self-acceptance, a loving, caring attitude towards himself, and a level of a sense of acceptance towards his mother and her limitations. And he hugs her, and that sort of undoes her because she can see that he's found peace, both with himself and with her, and she's not there. And she's not sure she'll ever be there. And in the process destroys really the relationship she has with her son, which wasn't great to begin with, and her husband. So we're going to come back to this topic of what the limitations we get in our way of compassion and talking about how that then translates into other areas of our life. So we're going to take a break. This is Mary Angela McGuire. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
The Truth Is Funny, Shift Happens with Colette Marie Stephan is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific Time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio, Shift from Confusion to Clarity, Self-Doubt to Confidence, and from Anxiety to Peace and Balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Nothing But Now, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and we're on Transformation Talk Radio. So today we are talking about compassion, and we've been talking about the obstacles to compassion, the ways in which our feelings can overwhelm us. And so when we are in the presence of an opportunity to show compassion, there can be those feelings that are overwhelming us, particularly if we're struggling to notice them, to notice how we feel in our body, to notice what our mind is doing. We may jump into some habits that are actually not very compassionate, even though they may, in some cases, be quite well-intentioned. So we may jump in for another person and take over their feelings, take over the situation, try to problem solve them. We may shut down completely. And I was talking about the film and novel Ordinary People and the mother character in that film who is struggling so much she doesn't really, in some ways throughout the film, until late in the film, look like she's struggling. She looks like she's kind of floating on the surface, but you know that it's really a kind of shutdownness. And I used to show the film in the interpersonal communication class, and students were really horrified by it because it is a beautiful film, but it is disturbing. And it is a great example, though, of what Jack Kornfield says about compassion. And he says, compassion that does not include the self is incomplete. And this mother character in the film really, I think, does what I hear a lot of people telling me when I talk oftentimes to clients, which is that kind of a sense of, look, as long as I'm nice to other people, does it really matter if I'm nice to myself, right? And so for an extreme case like the Beth character in Ordinary People, you know, there's a correctness to everything that she does. She is kind to other people. She is thoughtful about gifts. She buys her son shirts. She's makes sure that he has enough, the right kind of food to eat, all of those things. So at her extreme, as long as I'm meeting that okayness, goodness, this is appropriate standard, does it matter if I'm kind to myself? And in a way, does it matter if I'm kind to my child? But even people who are more giving, loving, perhaps, than Beth was able to be, really, if I'm not showing compassion to myself, what is that thing that I'm calling compassion that I'm showing to other people? And I think it really can put us in that place of being at risk of showing pity or sympathy that is very one down, or empathy that is a kind of taking over. When we're not clear with ourselves about compassion and our feelings towards ourselves, then I think that even loving gestures can be problematic and can kind of have that one down approach to them, as opposed to being kind of with someone in their suffering, not to take over, but to be a loving and kind witness to what's happening for them, be there for them. So I'm going to shift a little bit then to the things we've been talking about in the last two shows about racism in America and what the responsibilities of white Americans are to address it. And I think that compassion is a critical feature of this dynamic and of this problem that we're facing. And I want to talk about it then in relationship to this topic. So I want to start with what we talked about last week was the idea of being in a rut. And I think that racism is a kind of rut, right? It is a habit of thinking. It may be very deep-seated. We might want to make what I think is becoming a more widely understood distinction between what does it mean to say I'm not a racist to what does it mean to say I am actively engaged in anti-racism activities. And I'm not a racist can be very passive, and it can say I'm just going to kind of accept where I am right now and say I'm not that. Whereas anti-racism requires a kind of archaeology of the self to say, truly, what have I been taught? What images do I fill my mind with? What are my habits of mind so that I can begin to understand places where inevitably most of us have a kind of racist response as white Americans to people of color. So that's the first thing about it, is that I think that it can be a rut, a habit of mind, and one that is difficult to root out entirely. A second thing that I think is important about thinking about this as a kind of a pathway or a rut that we get into is what our capacity is sometimes as whites to throw another person into that rut of racism. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. I've worked on college campuses most of my life, and I've never been on one where there weren't students of color who had the story of being one of perhaps the only person of color in a classroom, let's say the only African-American in a class, and having the professor stop the class about some topic or another and say, turn to the one African-American student in the class and say, basically, will you tell us the Black perspective on this, right? So students will tell you, and I would tell you, that's a microaggression, that kind of pointing out. But I really want us to think about what is the experience of that person sitting at that desk, right? How is it that my casual comment like that, or the kind of where are you from, or can I touch your hair kinds of comments, what is that? What is happening for the person who is the object of those? How am I throwing them into a kind of spiral, a rut of thinking? So you just imagine the student sitting in class, minding his or her own business, taking notes, not thinking about their racial identity, right? They're not in a place where they're thinking about that. They're just taking notes in a class. And suddenly that knowledge, that information is thrust upon them, right? And somebody, a person in authority, unfortunately, even worse, is saying, this is the one thing I noticed about your identity. This is the one thing I think is salient about who you are, is your race. And so I'm going to point that out and I'm going to ask you. Now, suddenly, this person who's been busy taking notes, imagine where their mind might go. Is this the first time it's happened, right? Am I back in that, oh my God, is that really all anybody notices about me, right? So I think that when we think about racism, we think about it as a habit of mind. We sometimes as whites wish people of color would stop talking about it. And then we lose track of the fact that we are the ones who are so aware of it that we push other people into thinking about it, into being distracted by that. And I think that's important to keep in mind as we go through our daily lives and think about this. So then the third thing is this challenge of compassionate action in a racist society. So Tara Brach, it's such a great definition. I like to go back to it. Vulnerability, including the vulnerability of this life, all life in our heart. Right? Recognize I'm vulnerable. You're vulnerable. We live in a vulnerable and fragile world. It means having the courage to love ourselves, each other, and our world. And in this context, recognizing my own racism, being able to love myself despite that and to find ways, therefore, to act in an anti-racist way, each other, despite our differences and my recognition and maybe my fixation on differences, and our world, despite its troubles. And then radical compassion is rooted in mindful, embodied presence expressed actively through caring that includes all beings. So staying embodied, staying in my body and noticing. And I think if we go back to those four obstacles, or five, maybe it was at six, obstacles that I've noted to compassionate action, how do those play out with regard to this challenge we're facing? So am I the problem solver, right? I mean, if you're reading widely, as so many of us are these days, about racism in America, and trying to read primarily from the perspective of African Americans or people of color in general, this idea of the white savior, right? So in the face of your suffering in this racist society, do I come in as the white knight, as the problem solver, as the savior, and say, I know the answers, right? And if I stop, can I stop and think about what is motivating that? What's happening inside for me that I shut down in a sense? I'm not listening. I'm just acting and I'm just intent on solving the problem and not really listening to what's happening. And the same thing with taking over, right? Am I going to be angry on your behalf? Am I going to be the loudest voice at the protest? Am I really listening to what others are telling me about their experience? Or am I just engaged and enraged in my own feelings about it, such that in a way I'm pushing you out of the center of the conversation, you who are actually the person at whom racist activity is directed? Am I asking to be absolved, right? I was talking to a friend the other day, happens to be African-American, and I asked him how he was doing. And he said, you know, about a week ago, I had a day where I realized I had spent 8 hours on the phone and I was exhausted and I was helping people manage their feelings and talking to family and friends. And he said, and talking to white friends who were calling me to say, hey, I'm not that white person, am I? So instead of finding a way to manage our own guilt, fear, unhappiness, we turn it and make it somebody else's responsibility and say, will you tell me, please tell me I'm not that person. But it really pushes us again into the center. It keeps us from dealing with our own feelings and it makes our feelings somebody else's responsibility. And then I think the shutting down, the turning away, that it's too much for me and I don't know what to do. And you know, that is to me sort of the epitome of white privilege, right? That I can choose not to look. I can choose to turn away. I can choose to say, it's not my problem and there's nothing I can do about it. But if I stop, if I'm using mindfulness practices and I'm in a situation where these issues are salient and where aren't they today, I want to pay attention to what's happening inside me so that I can turn a compassionate eye towards myself before I make myself, my overwhelmed feelings, someone else's problem. Either by being a savior, by being angry for them, by asking them to absolve me, or being so overwhelmed that I shut down. And I missed one, which was it's too easy to show compassion, right? I think when we accuse people of playing the race card, that's one of the things we're doing. Our guilt and shame is so overwhelming. We don't know what to do with it. And so we shut down and we say it's not really a problem. That was the fifth one. So in these last few weeks we've been talking about, and I want to review a little bit of what are some things that we can do to practice mindfulness so that when we are in a situation that is troubling and where we're going to struggle, we can bring compassion to it. But we can't, you know, if you think about Brock's definition of compassion, if it's embodied presence, I can't get to embodied presence if my mind is floating away, if I'm down the rabbit hole of the past. So I hope that you have done, especially this, the one that I mentioned in the very first episode that you might want to check out in the archives, which is asking yourself those two questions. Stopping throughout the day to notice two things and ask the two questions. How do I feel in my body? And what is my mind doing? There is so much going on around us. There is so much suffering. There is so much challenge and change and feeling that there is chaos all around us, that it's very important more than ever to be able to stop ourselves a couple of times a day and check in with ourselves. And the more that we can do that, the more we have the habit of doing that when things are not difficult, when we're just sort of quietly at home, the better able we're going to be able to do that when there is a difficult situation. I keep thinking of the woman in Central Park, and I think there are lots of ways to explain her behavior. But what if she could have checked in with herself and realized, and I think she felt guilty. I think she felt foolish. I think she felt embarrassed that a person was correcting her behavior. And she, right, a ridiculous, extreme reaction that she had to that. But she did not have the presence of mind to quiet herself and act in a compassionate way, both towards herself, I'm afraid because I feel foolish and stupid, I've done this bad thing, and I want to be compassionate towards the person in front of me who's pointing that out. That's a hard thing to do, but we've got to try. we have this obligation and responsibility. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to review what we've been talking about and then preview next week's show. I'm Mary Angela McGuire. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Do you know how to achieve wellness in all areas of your life? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Signs of wellness are a capacity to love and ability to nurture, a sense of purpose, a good sense of humor and plenty of fun in your life, a concern for others and a respect for the environment, a conscious commitment to personal excellence, a sense of balance and integrated lifestyle, and capacity to cope with whatever life presents. Well, people enjoy their lives and want them to last as long as possible. That's why the wellness mindset usually accompanies other constructive, healthy lifestyle habits. By adopting a wellness mindset and behaviors like eating well, taking the right nutrition for the body, exercising, and saying affirmations are just a few things to structure a healthy system of values and beliefs. I will be your wellness coach to help you achieve a wellness lifestyle. Call us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. And our topic today has been compassion. We've been looking at, first of all, the dynamic of sort of, I would call it subject positions of when we are wanting to express love, compassion towards another person, a person we perceive as suffering, how do we do that in a way that is with them and not sort of from a superior position? Because we always want to remind ourselves when we think about that, like maybe I'm trying to be empathetic and I've accidentally overtaken the conversation, but I had good intentions. I think instead of thinking about it from the perception of ourselves maybe failing to enact compassion in a way that we're proud of, think about what it feels like to be on the receiving end of that. I think that can be an easier way to get in touch with and notice how we don't want to behave in our lives. So that's one thing just to be thinking about in terms of how do I put this into action? So we talked about that, the idea that we don't want to come from a superior position because it doesn't feel good to be on the receiving end of that. It, you know, as soon as we get towards pity, I think we're not helping the situation at all. We talked about Tara Brach's idea of compassion as being having a loving attitude towards ourselves, others, and the world, and feeling of an embodied presence in the world where we can have caring towards others, ourselves, and the world in our heart. And, you know, one of my examples was the character from the novel of the movie Judith, Ordinary People. And, you know, I didn't say this earlier, but I was thinking about it at the break. You know, really, I think the mother's problem ultimately that we're shown is that she couldn't forgive herself for what was simply true, that she had two children and she was more drawn to, more comfortable with, more found more enjoyable, the older son. And, you know, that's not a crime. But think about how she maybe felt when he died and the shame that she felt in thinking, oh, why was it that one, for instance, right? But we want to say, you know, oh, she's a monster for thinking that. But of course she's not, she's just human. She had a human response, and acknowledging that, sitting with that terrible feeling and allowing it to pass through her would have taken her towards a loving kindness attitude towards herself that would have allowed her, I think, to be then loving and kind and compassionate towards her son and her husband, who were also suffering. So then we've also been talking about it in the context of racism and how do we, those of us who are white, who are engaged in this work of a kind of archaeology of self, of understanding the roots and the ways in which racist ideology is embedded in so much of the world around us, how do we bring that to consciousness in a way that allows us to act with compassion, which is to say to not shut down, to not blame, but also to not take over from other people, take over their experiences, right? Whether we're trying to be racist or anti-racist, we can act in a way that is damaging and is not helpful and is not empowering to others. So I think in thinking about our racism and our desire to be anti-racist, I think compassion and mindfulness are two concepts that can really help us in that work. And in taking responsibility for our experience, our feelings, our challenges, rather than making that someone else's responsibility. It's very critical. I recently read an excellent article by Sarah Bellamy. She's the artistic director of Penumbra Theater in St. Paul. It's called Performing Whiteness. It's in the June 8th issue of the Paris Review. And if you go to my Facebook page, you'll see that it's linked there. It is a brilliant article, brilliant assessment of the times that we're living in. And I think you would find it extremely helpful. I know that I did. And I just can't recommend it highly enough. So let's breathe a little, right? Let's take another three deep breaths and then we'll talk a little bit more. So just just paying attention to the breath, right? Number two, relax. And then number three, what do you need for the next hour? So mindfulness, particularly compassion in the mindfulness practice, is something that I talk with clients about all of the time. And if you'd like to learn more about my work as a life coach and a communication coach, you can go to my website. It's McGuireLifeCoach.com. And my last name is spelled M-A-G-U-I-R-E. So McGuireLifeCoach.com. And you can contact me through my webpage. You can contact me through Facebook. And you can contact me through my email address, which is just MaryAngelaMcGuire@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. And next week, we're going to take the show in a little bit of a new direction, and I'm going to start interviewing people. I'm very, very excited about this. I've tried to lay down in these first few episodes some basic concepts about mindfulness and some very specific practices that you might start incorporating into your life, kind of baby steps towards bringing mindful awareness to each moment of your day. To challenge yourself to grow in your mindfulness practice, whether that means incorporating a specific and more formal meditation session, which is always very helpful, or even the small practices throughout the day that allow you to be more present and to gain a deeper understanding of yourself, of where your mind goes, of what your habits of mind are, so that you can be more mindful in your actions and, I think, more true to yourself and to how you really want to be in the world without those voices, that dictator or that wild child voice that we've talked about, getting in the way. Those voices are really culture, family, religion, education, working on us, working through us. And it takes some effort. It takes concentrated effort and attention to discern the difference between the authentic voice that is watching and observing those voices and those voices themselves. So that's what we've been doing in the shows. And now I'm going to bring in guests because we're going to talk about them some mindfulness in some more specific ways. So next week, my first guest is going to be my friend, Dr. Craig Gingrich Philbrook. Craig is a professor in the Communication Studies Department at Southern Illinois University Carbondale. And he particularly is in the Performance Studies program. So we're going to have a lively conversation about mindfulness and the creative process. He is a teacher, a performance artist, a mentor, a friend, and he brings his understanding of the creative process and mindfulness, I think, to everything that he does. And so he's going to talk to us about that. And then after that, in the weeks that follow after, we're going to shift to other voices that I'd like to lift up and bring your attention to. And I'll be talking a little bit more about that next week. So in the meantime, I would encourage you to continue to be curious about your own mind, pay attention to where your mind is going. And I strongly encourage you to be kind to yourself. If we can't be kind to ourselves, what we tell ourselves is kindness towards others often isn't. And we fool ourselves into thinking sometimes that everything's fine as long as we're providing something that looks like kindness to other people. But Cornfield's right. If we don't have compassion for ourselves, what we're offering to the rest of the world is incomplete. But I would also say it may not be compassion at all. And I think most of us really have that as a goal in our lives, to be compassionate towards others. But it takes an effort. And it's not always going to put us in a place where we're dealing with positive feelings. There's really the need sometimes to sit in our fear, in our guilt, in our discomfort with ourselves in the world, and to know that those feelings can pass through us if we will allow them. Right? Shoving them away, distracting ourselves from them, being taken on a ride by that dictator voice, those things don't help. But quiet presence to ourselves and attention to ourselves can make all the difference. So until next week, thanks for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio.
Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.